So what makes a beacon happen? So there's, depending on the radio, there's 3 to 4 mechanisms for making beacons happen. Manual, it's physically, there's a button that says, usually it's beacon or BCN or BCN-TX, but there's a way you can, you won't transmit a position beacon unless two things happen. You either tell it manually to transmit a position beacon, or if you send a message, if you're sending a message to somebody, you actually send 2 APRS packets. The first one is your position so that the APRS system knows where you are. Then it sends the message. So even if you haven't transmitted your position in a while, if you send a message to somebody else, the first thing your radio does is send its position. So that's the manual method. Back in the old days with Mike E's, the Mike E would do some pretty fancy stuff. And it was called a Mike E because it was a little module you could actually build into a microphone. But the Mike E could be programmed so that if I'm talking on a voice repeater, every time I let up on the push to talk, it would tell my radio to transmit an APRS packet on the APRS frequency with what my position is. So this was, like I said, this was the old days, and it was a pretty slick system to try and manage traffic on, because APRS in North America, everybody's on one frequency, 144.39. For terrestrial APRS operations, there's a separate channel for satellite-based APRS. So to manage some of the traffic loads, and if you go any place like out west, like San Francisco or LA, 144.39 is like solid all the time. Here, Thursdays can get like that when everybody, you know, starts getting onto hams on the gram. But it's pretty busy around here. So push to talk was a method to try and modulate some of the packet traffic, because in these days, you know, the old days, it would just be basically time-based packet. So every 30 seconds, every minute, 10 minutes, 2 minutes, your station would just send its position, just based on clock time, no other consideration.
The NHL radios can be programmed to do that.
Oh, cool. Cool. It's nice to see that functionality still there, because it does have a lot of benefit. Okay. Automatic time base was the one I just talked about. Every fixed period of time, you'll send a position packet. Then there's what's called smart beaconing. Now this came along probably 10 years after push to talk, when the computing horsepower in radios and TNCs got, and the clients got a whole lot better. So what smart beaconing does, it looks at how fast I'm going and what my velocity vector is. So if I'm turning, like let's say I'm getting on the turnpike at an entrance, as I'm turning, I'm going down the ramp and turning in circles. Every so many degrees of turn, my APRS radio is going to send a position packet. And for somebody just looking at you from another radio, doesn't do much for you. But if somebody is watching you on a map from a client, all of a sudden, your packets are now following a road. So somebody can actually watch you. Oh, yeah, there he goes. He's getting on the expressway and watching you go along. So it looks at rate of turn. It also looks at how fast you're going. And as you slow down, it makes your packets more frequent. Or no, sorry, flip that around. As you slow down, your packets get slower because you're not covering as much territory, so you don't need to tell the world. You don't need to be sitting in one spot saying, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here. You know, it's like that annoying toddler, you know, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here. So as you go faster, though, because you cover more ground in less time, the rate of beacon transmission decreases. And these are all parameters that can be set usually in the radio about how fast I want to go. Like my, the radio in my truck is set for 25 and 50, well, 25 and 48. So if I'm below 25 miles an hour, I basically am sending things at the I'm standing still rate. When I accelerate past 25, now it starts increasing the speed, getting a little faster and a little faster and a little faster. And then when I get to 50, anything above 50, I'm going to send packets at the maximum rate I established. Like in my case of my truck, when I'm over 50, it's going to send a packet every 2 minutes.
So the concept is to have the packet spaced geographically approximately the same.
Exactly.
Regardless of vehicle speed.
Correct. And it looks really pretty on the map.
That's all that matters.
Yeah. Yeah. For some, no, seriously, for some people it is. That's a big deal. And hey, whatever motivates you to get involved with this, you know, no judgment. As long as people are playing APRS and getting familiar with the technology, your reasons are your own. So paths. This is something you're going to hear, especially on the radios. You're going to see a menu entry called path. So paths are basically a way we control where our packet goes. In connected packet, I control where my packet goes based on who I connect to. Like if I want to connect to Carl, but I can't talk to Carl directly, but we can both see a digipeater, I'll say connect to Carl via John. And then all my packets will go to John, and then John will go to Carl, and then vice versa, back and forth. APRS, we don't have that, so we use paths to control how our packets spread. There are digipeaters have aliases. Everything has a call sign, but then you also have an alias. The digipeater in Clayton is Clayton. There's one you'll see pop up occasionally, MAYSLD, which is Mays Landing. You usually see that one pop up about a month before the MS-150, and it goes away about a couple of months after. It's set up just for the MS-150. But usually it's been a convention that digipeaters take their alias takes some form of whatever political feature they're closest to. So Clayton is obviously in the town of Clayton, Mays Landing. There's one up in Manahawkin. I forget what the designator for that one is. But there's all kinds of digipeaters, and usually they have some sort of geolocator. So you can sit there and watch an APRS packet come by on your radio and see Clayton. Ooh. Hey, yeah, I know where Clayton is. Well, there's a digipeter there. You know, it can help you roll into an area that you don't know super well and kind of see what network resources are there. So that's the standard AX25 alias. You can have that connected node packet too. You know, John could have an alias on his home station. It's called John QTH. So aliases are just the way it is, so you don't have to remember everybody's call sign. But Bob, thinking ahead, leveraged the alias capability to do some more things that the original AX25 spec nobody had envisioned. So there's a special case called WIDE 1-1. And it is exactly that name, WIDE 1-1. And what that means is I highly recommend your home station, make your home station alias WIDE 1-1. That way, any packet, especially folks that are trying to use HTs for APRS, where you're at a real disadvantage power-wise, WIDE 1-1, you also hear that referred to as a fill-in digi. Like iGate at home is also functions as a fill-in digi because I walk, you know, when I'm across the street walking the dog, I won't get a packet out in this area without using my fill-in digi. Just the naked radio by itself, it gets stomped. So WIDE 1-1 is a special case, and everybody can be WIDE 1-1. Now, WIDE N-N, Okay. And this is our 5 seconds of high school algebra. N is just a variable. So you'd have wide 1-1, wide 2-1, wide 2-3, up to wide 7-7. But if you're sending out wide 7-7, you better have a really good reason, because it's considered very rude behavior to have your packet go way outside the area that you're operating in. Usually, you want to keep it, if you got an HT, you want to set up for like 3 total retransmissions, or hops as you hear them referred to. So you want to, as an HT, 3 hops, as a mobile, 2 hops. If you're out west, any place past, I don't know, maybe Ohio, Southern Illinois, you're heading out, yeah, basically anything west of the Mississippi, you can up those numbers, because the APRS infrastructure, like the Great Plains, there's a big empty spot. So you can feel comfortable running, you know, a wide 4-4, because it's going to take that many hops for somebody, you know, some other human being to see you. But for this area, wide 1-1 and then maybe wide 2-1 for an HT, and just wide 2-1, or sorry, wide 2-2 for a mobile. When we actually get to the point where we're programming radio in another session, I'll talk about the practicalities of this.
Question, John.
Yeah.
So what I've seen radios programmed, they usually are wide 1-1, wide 2-1, or something like that. Two questions. One is the fact that if you have 2 of them in there, you're going to be repeated twice, and then it's going to stop. Cool. So that was your point about, you know, how many times do you get repeated before it stops going, and you don't want it to go forever, because you're going to type a whole damn network with it.
Exactly.
The question that I've always had is, wide 1 is not the name of anything in particular. Okay, how does it know if I'm driving down the road near your house within range of Clayton, and I've got wide 1 programmed, what digipeter is going to repeat that? Because I haven't told it which one it is.
All right, wide 1-1, anything that has wide 1-1 programmed in it is going to repeat that.
Okay.
Now, when you go and say the first number after wide is how many hops you want to go.
Okay.
So if I say wide 2, I'm telling the system, the RF system, that I want my packets to go 2 hops. The second one is the number of hops. So the first digipeter that catches my packet, the first wide 2 digipeter that catches my packet, the packet it receives will say wide 2-2. When it sends it out, it takes 1 off, and then so the packet that comes out of the digipeter says wide 2-1, not 2-2. Now the next digipeter that hears that says, oh, okay, wide 2-1. Okay, I'll send that packet on. The next digipeter down the line, well, the second digipeter, when we went from wide 2-1, when it sends it out, it makes that wide 2-0. Now, you don't see it because the APRS system basically blanks trailing zeros on SSIDs. So it'll just say wide 2, and a third digipeter hears that and says, oh, there's no hops left. I'm not sending that information. So basically, it lets you not transmit a position packet and have it show up all up and down the East Coast. You can let, you know, because really the core principle of APRS is it's local information. It's local changing information you want to respond to or information you need. Do I really care that there's lightning in Tallahassee? Any given day, that's not a newsflash. So I don't need to know weather information from Tallahassee unless I'm doing some hurricane stuff. But as a general rule, I don't care outside the local area. I mean, I really, for APRS in this area, I kind of don't care about anything further west than about Philadelphia. And even then, you know, we're blessed out here in the East Coast. We've got a lot of APRS coverage. Especially, I was just in Gettysburg recently. The park is actually flooded with APRS resources, and it really, really enhances the trip.
So, but back to my first question. If there are five digipeters that I can reach and I transmit to wide one, are all of them going to repeat? Or because there's no negotiation?
Yes, but.
Okay, that's my question.
Okay.
Yeah, what's the but?
All right, the but is...
Well, it's kind of around the bottom.
It's the tender part of the cow, but
yeah.
But that's barbecue, not APRS. Okay. So the function, and it's built into the AX25 protocol. There is a timing function called FRAC, and I always loved this because I was a Battlestar Galactica fan. So. But FRAC introduces a random amount of time. So when a digipeater hears a packet that it's going to repeat, it doesn't send it immediately. It hears the packet, it starts a timer, and that timer value is called FRAC, and the R in FRAC stands for random. So it randomizes. Otherwise, no digipeater past the first one would hear you because they'd all QRM each other. So it's not a problem. It's a feature, not a bug, in that if multiple wide digipeaters hear me, that they both transmit because of the FRAC function. They don't clobber each other, and it may let my packet go a couple hops north, a couple hops south. It all depends on the infrastructure. The cool part is you don't have to do anything different. You set up this path, it's the people that operate the digipeaters who make accommodations for the different types of paths. So that's why you can hop in your car now, drive to Gettysburg, not change a single setting on your radio, and make perfect use of APRS. There's also, for troubleshooting, there's a very similar function called Trace. The APRS client software treats trace packets a little bit differently. Basically, it lets us build a map of how our packet got from one place to another. In the early days of setting up APRS and packet networks, this thing was hugely valuable because you could sit there and draw a map, figure out the blind spots where maybe a digipeater couldn't see a certain geographic area. And so you go maybe put a fill-in to improve fill in that hole. That's where Trace comes in handy, but day-to-day use, you may see it. Like if you're looking at the packet, because almost every radio lets you look at the raw packets coming through. And sometimes it's kind of interesting to watch just to see what's going on, like, especially if you hear a lot of packets banging out one after another. And at the same signal strength, you might want to look at that to see, hey, is there one station that's losing its mind and, you know, transmitting continuously? So you'll see packets like Trace pop up once in a while, but for an end user in day-to-day operations, not really a big deal. Then there's state aliases. Clayton, because I did the original programming, is set up as a state alias digipeater. So if I don't want my packets to go to Pennsylvania for whatever reason, let's say we're just dealing with something local in South Jersey, I can change my path to NJ2-2 or NJ3-3, which will propagate my packets out, you know, two hops, three hops, whatever I want to do, but only in the state of New Jersey. A digipeater across the river in Philly that can hear me just fine will ignore my packets because they're not addressed to PA, they're addressed to NJ. If you need to go beyond that, that's when you switch back to the regular wide function, if you don't care about political boundaries. But if you've got some operational reason, you can limit your packet travel to just a particular state.
John, so a home packet station, it's not really a digipeater, but it will digipete. doesn't recognize the wide unless you do something to make it recognize the wide. Is that right?
Yes. Wide 1-1. That's that special case. That's for fill-in. Basically, what we're using our resource to help fill an area in. We've got some blank spot. Somebody, you know, you have trouble getting packets out. The other thing, too, is if you set up your a home digi, a fill-in digi, one of the things it gives you, though, is you see a whole lot more APRS stuff because you're now seeing APRS information that's outside the footprint of what your radio directly can hear. So I see a whole lot more APRS traffic now that I run a node at home.
John, if you program your handheld for wide 1-1, is that acting as a digipeater too?
It can, but it doesn't. There's no purpose to it. Your HT is not going to fill in anything. And I don't mean to disparage HTs. I love APRS HTs. They're a great concept. The problem is 5 watts. And typically, a rubber dummy loop. You're gonna get stomped by every mobile running 10 watts or more. Now, if you happen to hit that lucky spot where for 5 or 10 seconds the frequency's quiet because everybody got done sending their packets and they're shutting up for 5 or 10 seconds, you can get a packet out on HT. But you got to be patient. You got to really sit there and milk it.
So that begs the question then, is it detrimental to have too many APRS digipeaters or stations in a given geographic area?
Fill-ins, no. Fill-ins are basically zero cost to the network. But if you have too many wide area digipeaters, like Clayton is a wide area digipeater. Mm-hmm. If you have too many of those, then yeah, you can cause some network havoc that way. But you also have the option as a home station, if you're not moving, you can, instead of using these aliases, you can use the actual call sign. Like Clayton is KD2LNB. So you can actually route from home, like I have it hard coded at home, that when I send an automatic packet at 20 minutes after the hour, one's going to go to Clayton by call sign. The next 20 minutes it goes by, the next position packet is going to go to Mays Landing. So I can sit there and basically it's almost like aiming. Boom, I'm going to fire a packet this way. Oh, 20 minutes later, boom, I'm going to fire a packet this way. Because I designated physical, you know, like full call sign stations. So I can control how my packet, you know, propagates, which is great for a fixed home station. Mobiles, you really need to use the generics because then you don't have to reprogram your radio every time you move into a new area. You just travel and the network is configured to basically be very friendly to travelers.
John, so when you set up Clayton and you set up as a New Jersey alias, so mm-hmm. just could that also have been set up so it's like Keystone area, so if you wanted Delaware, Philadelphia, general area, and South Jersey.
That's where the generics come in. So basically, if you don't need something locked down to a specific area, there had been some, back in the day, there had been some discussion about creating an alias called SNJ, just for South Jersey, but it was one of those things where we were trying to achieve a statewide consensus, and the North folks were like, nah. Pooping on us again, as they usually do.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's what it looks like. And here's that first one, that fill-in. So, and by the way, the big wide area digipeaters will also respond to wide 1-1. So wide 1-1 is a freebie. So let's say Clayton hears me first. Well, Clayton digipeats me on wide 1-1. The next digipeater will see this next, the wide 2, and says, oh, he wants to go 2 hops. Oh, 2-1, he's already gone 1 hop. So now the second digipeater that hears that packet takes that 1, makes it a 0, and it doesn't go any further than that. So that's how you control the spread of packets. Now, technically, I'm being a bad person because I'm using wide 1-1 for a mobile. I really should just put wide 2-2 in there. But I'm effectively doing the same thing with wide 1-1, wide 2-1. Overall, I'm taking, I want two hops. Again, for an HT, you want to set it up for three hops to give yourself the best advantage.